I'm Brad Linder, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Dave Heller's off this evening. Prison lifers sentenced in Philadelphia as teenagers are expected to start getting new hearings this summer. WHYY's Bobby Allen reports the state court system has released its plan for taking another look at these inmates to comply with a U.S. Supreme Court ruling.
The decision said a child is less responsible than an adult would be for committing murder, and that a young person has the capacity to change before being condemned to die in prison. So Philadelphia, which has more juvenile lifers than any place in the country, will be taking a new look at 300 inmates, with one exception. As long as the person isn't corrupt beyond repair. If it's proven that they are, they'll stay in prison.
So no jury has reviewed that question. No judge has reviewed that question. That's something that's going to have to be done now for the first time.
Public defender Bradley Bridge is taking on many of the cases. He says a panel of judges will handle legal issues raised by each case. And the inmates are in prisons all over Pennsylvania, so it's going to take some serious legwork to reassemble their cases. But once it's all squared away, a new sentencing date will be set, and many might just be set free.
People that have been in, it seems to me, 40, 50, 60 years and have been doing fine in prison are appropriate for release as soon as we can establish an appropriate reentry plan to allow them to get assimilated back into society.
Bridge says the high court ruling does not stop prosecutors in Philly from ever again sentencing a teenage murderer to life in prison.
The United States Supreme Court never said they couldn't get a life sentence. They just said it couldn't be mandatory.
For decades in Pennsylvania, first and second degree murder convictions triggered automatic life sentences for all ages, but not anymore. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Delaware lawmakers have introduced bipartisan legislation that, if passed, would qualify terminally ill patients of all ages for medical marijuana to treat pain, anxiety, and depression. WHYY's Zoe Reed reports from the Delaware desk.
When Rich Jester's father, Robert, took medicinal marijuana oil to alleviate the side effects of treatments for a stage 3 lung cancer, Jester saw a vast difference.
Before cannabis oil, my dad never got out of bed. After cannabis oil, my father was always downstairs or in the kitchen or up or outside.
But when his father sought approval for a state-issued ID to take cannabis legally, Jester says his father's doctor refused and threatened to report him if he continued using it. Jester said his father declined instantly. Jester expressed frustration to Democratic State Representative Paul Bomback, whose legislation would add terminal illness to the qualifying conditions for receiving medication.
We have anecdotal evidence of medical marijuana being effective there, and yet we also know, and I've spoken to a constituent who has cancer, and it drove her nuts that she either had to be a criminal and break the law in the state or be able to avoid the kind of narcotic pain medicine that is typically prescribed.
Bob's bill, named after Jester's late father, would allow terminally ill patients with less than a year to live to use medicinal marijuana with a physician's approval. Qualifying conditions now include cancer, HIV/AIDS, and intractable epilepsy. Those under 18 are eligible if they have intractable epilepsy or other chronic diseases. Under Bomback's legislation, children would still be restricted to oil products, which don't result in a high. Jester says he hopes more Delawareans will be able to use medicinal marijuana to ease their final days.
When you're terminally ill, you have few choices in life. And when it comes down to it, you should be allowed to choose how you spend your last days.
From the Delaware Desk, I'm Zoe Reed, WHYY News.
Last night, the University of Pennsylvania welcomed alum and Estonian president Tomas Hendrik Ilves. WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg reports his ties to this region go beyond his years at Penn.
I remember coming here in 93, 94, and I actually heard people talking about ancient Baltic tribal hatreds. I exaggerate, but not much.
Born in Sweden to parents who fled Estonia during World War II, Ilves was raised in New Jersey and got his PhD in psychology at Penn, later working as a journalist for Radio Free Europe. Following the end of the Soviet occupation, he moved to Estonia and brought his love of technology with him. As his final term as president comes to a close, Estonia is one of three former Soviet nations with functional democracies and free press. It's also a member of the European Union and NATO. Technological advancements have made the country a global model for connectivity. Estonians file their taxes, check on prescriptions, and vote online. But as Russia annexes parts of Ukraine and Georgia, Ilves worries the West is minimizing concerns about aggression.
It's not a Ukrainian crisis. It's a Russian invasion. The Ukrainians are not in a crisis. They are invaded. They're occupied. They have had territory annexed.
But perhaps more worrying to the son of refugees are populist movements gaining traction in the far right and left parties of the European Union. Ilves sees parallels in history to now. He says inaction among leaders during crises leads the public to seek candidates that sound decisive, even if that will undermine the Federation keeping the peace.
This path that we're on will be the end of Europe, and a return to the might makes right mindset of the 1930s. In that kind of Europe, everyone will ultimately lose, but the first ones to lose will be the small.
For WHYY News, I'm Kyrie Greenberg.
When voters pause to consider a Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton presidency, what comes to mind? In this week's edition of What Are We Thinking, NewsWorks Tonight hosts Dave Heller spoke with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll, about how unaligned voters feel about those two possible outcomes.
Well, we ask Americans if there was a Trump presidency and if there was a Hillary Clinton presidency, would those individuals be great, good, average, poor, or terrible? And it probably comes as no shock to tell you that few Americans think either would be great presidents. 12% think that Hillary Clinton would be a great president. But interestingly, 11% say that Donald Trump would be a great president. So they're about equal on that front. Much more negative, 35% of Americans say that Trump would be a terrible president. But again, 29% say that Hillary Clinton would be a terrible president. So the more we look at the data, the more we see that it's not lopsided. Americans are fairly negative about the presidency, potential presidency of both of these people, but there's really not a strong skew towards perceiving or prognosticating that one of them would be more terrible or more likely to be great than the other one.
I found it interesting that only some 6% say that either would be terrible.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and that's a good point because we do hear a lot of the narrative now, the discussion that many, many Americans are disgusted with both candidates. I think it neither would be good at all or both would be terrible, as you just say, but 6% is all that say that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump would be a terrible president. In fact, when we enlarge that to poor and terrible, we're down to just 14% who think that both of them would be poor or terrible presidents.
Image aside, what issues do Americans want the candidates to target?
We just asked that question, and it's very important. I think that we need to pay attention to what the public want these presidents to do if elected, regardless of who's elected. So if I were advising either of these two candidates, I would say, from the average American, Mr. or Ms. President, here's what you should focus on: the economy, jobs, keeping the nation secure, and then focusing on education for our nation's children and young people and health care.
Though one of the knocks on Donald Trump is that it's said that he focuses precious little on these issues.
Well, he has positions on some of these, although they're quite general, as you say, Dave. He says we would make America great again. He does talk about the economy. He says I would be the greatest jobs president in the world history. So he's focusing on it, but in a very, very general way. Hillary Clinton's focusing on the issues, but much more, I would say, microscopically. She has very specific things she would do on each of these issues, where Donald Trump tends to be much more general in how he would approach them.
Once upon a time, the general election season got underway in earnest after Labor Day. We're coming up on Memorial Day. How closely are Americans paying attention?
Their attention to this election is certainly up there with what we were seeing when we looked back in 2008, which, of course, was a very interesting election, an open seat election like this one, and we had the young Barack Obama at that time. So we have Americans following it closely on the one hand, but not all that enthused about voting on the other.
Typically, Republicans are more enthused than Democrats about going to the polls. Still the case?
Absolutely. We just said, are you more enthusiastic or less enthusiastic about voting? This year, we find Republicans are net positive, more enthusiastic. Democrats are net negative. That's very, very important. That's a flip of what we found back in 08 when Democrats were more positive. Part of that is because we were coming off 8 years of a Republican president in 08. And Barack Obama was exciting a lot of Democrats. Now we're coming off 8 years of a Democratic president, and it's flipped. But the data are clear. Republicans are more enthusiastic right now about voting than Democrats. And if that persisted, could have an impact on turnout, all important turnout in the fall.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
Still ahead, residents of Ocean City, New Jersey have high hopes for beach season.
Last year was our best year in the last 5 years, so it was a good year, and this summer is going to be even better.
That's coming up as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Brad Linder, in for Dave Heller. More than 200,000 U.S. military members make the sometimes rocky transition from active duty to civilian life each year. WHYY's Shirley Min reports an effort's underway in Wilmington to make that change easier.
Sitting with Tom Davis on his front porch in Wilmington, the retired pastor tells me a good many veterans don't suffer from things like PTSD, but they do miss the military.
They miss the sense of purpose that they have, the camaraderie that they have in the service, and the excitement as well.
Davis gets it. He fought in Vietnam in 1970 with the Naval Reserves, but when he came back home, he went straight to seminary.
The reentry was softened by the fact that I had been accepted by a seminary. So I had a sort of built-in community waiting for me.
Davis says while the Department of Veterans Affairs does its best to deal with the worst cases, there's a void when it comes to training veterans on how to adjust to civilian life.
The Sioux Indians had a series of rituals that would bring them from their war paint consciousness back into peaceful tribe consciousness. Our armed services, I think, have not been quite aware that that's important, to have some transitioning rituals to come back.
So Davis started the Interfaith Veterans Work Group almost a year ago. It's a Wilmington-based group Davis hopes will retrain former troops and provide that sense of brotherhood and purpose at the same time, back at home. Modeled after the national nonprofit Mission Continues, IVW deploys its veterans on missions in the form of community service projects, like Wilmington's Veterans Freedom Mural. Philadelphia artist Eric Oakday came up with the design.
The larger image is a scene of two soldiers, and the one is just returning home. He's decorated with medals. And then there's an older veteran from previous wars that's there to greet him. And they're literally positioned in front of the world, the community. The title is Getting Back to the World.
A fitting project for IVW, whose mission is to help veterans do just that, get back to the world. The mural will color the north wall of Marcella's house at 9th and Washington Streets next month. It's a residential facility for formerly homeless veterans. The VA says the post-9/11 vet population will swell to 3.5 million in 3 years. Davis is hopeful his grassroots group can bridge the gap for at least one of them. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Shirley Min, WHYY News.
A soccer tournament is taking place in Philadelphia this weekend, but it's not at Talon Energy Stadium where the Philadelphia Union plays. Street Soccer USA will open 4 pop-up soccer stadiums at the foot of the Art Museum steps. Street Soccer USA provides opportunities for kids and young adults in urban areas to play soccer, and money raised through this weekend's tournament will serve at-risk and homeless young adults. Lawrence Kahn is founder and CEO of Street Soccer USA, and his brother Rob is chief operating officer, and they join us now on Newsworks Tonight. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Honored
to be having us.
Lawrence, can you tell me what Street Soccer USA is?
Street Soccer USA is it's a sport, first and foremost, and this weekend we have this amazing championship of street soccer in Philadelphia, but it's bigger than that. We use sport as a development tool to teach, you know, life and job skills, build resiliency, and really build relationships through the sports so that we can engage on the front end with youth, young adults, and then on the back end, connect them to whether it's internships, jobs, social services, you know, whatever the case may be. Sometimes the relationship is the most important thing.
So the idea is to sort of address homelessness and at-risk youth. Where did the idea to use soccer to do this come from?
You know, I was working at a homeless center in North Carolina, and we started seeing more young adults on the street and had all this, you know, energy, and which seemed to me a great thing to kind of channel and grab hold of. And, you know, sports have been important part of my life growing up, you know, and when things were difficult in our family, I had my soccer team, and that was a very successful part of my life. And I played, you know, Division I college soccer, so it was just something that made things normal and consistent throughout my life. And it seemed like these kids, you know, could really benefit from that. And the reality was, yeah, they did.
What's the reaction that you've seen with the kids and young adults who participate?
The message is let the kids play is what we've been saying. The kids want to play. They want to engage. And you got to, you know, if you stand there and start spitting life skills at them or give them a counterfeit sport experience, that's not what they want. They don't want to stand in line. They want to play. So when we take that approach that is a player-centric approach as opposed to the coach being some sort of star, when we look at the players as the stars, and that's what we say, that the game is the teacher and the kids have the answer. When you take that approach and just let them play, then they love it.
So Street Soccer USA has been holding tournaments around the country or in a couple of cities around the country for a number of years. Philadelphia is new this year. Why Philadelphia?
We had the good fortune of bringing some folks from the city of Philadelphia to see our tournament in San Francisco. And they said, well, we like to do this in Philly, but we just want it to be bigger and better than the San Francisco and the New York one. And when we looked at the art museum steps, we said, yeah, we can do this. So it really was the willingness of the community here to embrace kind of what we were talking about. We think Philadelphia can really be a leader in the sport for development movement. Just with this tournament alone, we think we can build it up into something really, really amazing.
So Rob, can you tell me what's actually going to be happening in Philadelphia this weekend?
Today we had our opening ceremony with our ambassadors for the event, Jimmy Conrad, a former U.S. World Cup player, as well as Heather Mitz, a local Philadelphia resident who is the gold medal winner. And they came out and kicked off the tournament with our sponsors, Uniqlo and Comcast in the city of Philadelphia. We had an opening ceremony and welcomed all of our teams from 14 different cities across the country. And we played matches all afternoon. And then tomorrow it turns into a street soccer festival. So all the people who have heard about the event, signed up and pre-registered are coming out. So we have 40 youth teams come and participate, as well as 45 adult teams. And they are community, you know, teams of friends, as well as corporations who have sponsored teams in the tournament. There'll be over 102 teams participating across four of our courts tomorrow. And then on Sunday, we'll have the final matches as we lead into Sunday afternoon. And you know, as Lawrence mentioned, this is really an opportunity for people to, you know, see the work that we do and talk about the work that we do in the neighborhoods. Because when we're doing that the rest of the year, you don't see it. But this is a big opportunity for us to be in a premier location for people to say, you know, wow, look at what's going on the rest of the year, and then come engage with us as we go into the neighborhoods that don't have access to a soccer team or soccer program.
You mentioned when the tournament's over, the goal is to keep playing soccer, to keep people engaged in the community. What actually happens at the end of this weekend?
So at the end of this weekend, we crown the champion of Philadelphia, the king of the museum steps, as it were. And those folks actually enter a Super Cup, so they compete against the winner of our Times Square tournament. So yes, we're crowning a champion. The best street soccer team in Philadelphia will be crowned.
Lawrence Kahn is CEO of Street Soccer USA, and Rob Kahn is Chief Operating Officer. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Today's weather had people flocking to the beaches early ahead of Memorial Day. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports.
In Ocean City, the beach season begins with a business person plunge. Doug Jewell has been leading the charge into the surf for more than a dozen years. He's optimistic this will be a great summer at the shore.
Last year was our best year in the last 5 years, so it was a good year, and this summer is going to be even better. Once this rain stops, and I think it stopped, the weather's clear now, we're going to have a gangbuster season.
Matthew Harris is a plumber who says he's very busy opening homes for the summer, turning the utilities back on, and in some cases cleaning a few clogged pipes.
You get the sand in the showers and the bathtubs, everybody coming home from the beach, and then, you know, the eventual toilet running and, you know, anything else that comes along, you know, the line.
With the summer comes a need for thousands of seasonal workers to fill the jobs at the shore, everything from maids to restaurant servers to amusement ride operators. Denise Bexson's head of human resources for the Maury Organization, which has amusement piers and hotels, among other businesses in the Wildwoods. She says applications from the tri-state region are down this year.
Applications are about 14% down from this time last year. We have over 200 jobs still to fill. So we are a little surprised by that. That's not what we forecasted. And scratching our heads a little and scrambling, but I think coming up with some good options to make sure that we don't go too long without enough people.
Bexson says Maury's operators are using maintenance people to fill in for ride operators and even repurposing such people as lifeguards in their off hours to run carnival-type games on the piers. She says the number of unfilled jobs will start to improve once foreign exchange students come to town. She says the company relies on them for about a third of their workforce. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov and Kimberly Haas, with additional production from Brett Rader. The news director is Eugene Son. Our engineer this week was Diana Martinez. John Musoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Brad Linder for Newsworks Tonight.